There was a time when silent movies were simply called movies. While the first couple of decades of the motion picture medium didn't include audio, the experience of seeing a movie in many theaters was not a quiet affair. Often musicians would play music along with the screening, sometimes a score that was composed especially for the film. Other times, the musicians would create a sort of soundtrack on the fly, using bits of music cobbled together, short bursts of music that might have titles like Stormy Weather or Action Number 5. Much of the music for the silent era is either lost or forgotten, but the Mont Alto Motion Picture Orchestra, a five-piece chamber ensemble, embraces the music. Last week, they returned to the University of Arkansas campus to debut a new score for the 1925 film The Vanishing American. A couple of hours before they accompanied the film during a showing inside Giffel's Auditorium on the U of A campus, I sat down with the ensemble's founder, Rodney Sauer, in the lobby of Carnell Hall to talk about the art of playing music alongside a silent film.
There are a few other groups doing this. Mostly it's us. There are a lot of groups that come up with new music for silent films. I wouldn't say a lot. There's four or five. Finding the historic music is a problem. It's been out of print since 1929. So either you are able to find an archive or get a collection that you can use, or you build it up painstakingly over the years. We sort of lucked into one that's at the University of Colorado, and I didn't know this music existed before then. And then I already had the group formed to do dance music, and when I came across this movie music, I thought, well, that could be really cool. We could do that. And so we got into it that way. We have a set roster of musicians who are regulars, and so we have really gotten used to each other, and we play. It's gotten to where it's very efficient to put together a new score, which, if you think about it, back in the day, an orchestra at a movie theater would often change programs every week, sometimes twice a week, and you had to come up with 2 hours of music for these programs. And so you had a big library of music like we've managed to acquire, and you put it together that way. There are a few other people who are putting this on. They usually are, you know, they put together an orchestra for a particular event and then work with that group. We're a bit more of a long-running group.
So say you and I are sitting here in 1927, mm-hmm. 1926, and of course it wasn't a hotel then, it was a classroom, but we are going to go downtown and we're going to see a Lon Chaney picture. And the next week it's going to be a Mary Pickford picture. And if there had been an orchestra there, they would have perhaps had to come up with something that was suitable for the Lon Chaney film, and then the next week, the Mary Pickford?
Exactly, yeah. And we had a very similar thing just recently. We are often asked to record for DVDs. We were asked to do a Lon Chaney film. It actually just came out October on the Kino label of The Penalty, and for that you need big, dark, melodramatic music. And then immediately we were asked to do this very light French comedy called Gribiche that's about a kid in Paris who is being brought up by a single mother. The kid realizes that she kind of wants to get married again but is worried about him. So when a rich American offers to adopt him, he jumps at the chance and goes off. And so anyway, there's nothing truly important that happens in this movie. It's just following these people. And so that needed very light, airy music and very sunny sort of to get the viewers into the right mood for that, where you can sit there and hum along and you're just walking down the boulevards of Paris on a sunny day.
You're contracted to have this score for a Lon Chaney film. You watch it first?
Oh, yes. Yeah. So what you do is you sit down, you watch the film, you note any particular incidents in the film that you need to deal with. In The Penalty, Lon Chaney plays a character whose legs were amputated when he was a child. So he has this fancy setup. So he looks, and he actually looks totally at home without his legs. He looks like he grew up this way. He does a very good job of the acting. But he's also a concert-level pianist. So the first thing that came into my mind is I'm the piano player in this group, so I'm the one who has to play the piano. And what's kind of sick and twisted about this film is that because he doesn't have legs, he's a crime lord in San Francisco, and he has these women working for him, and they have to operate the pedals of the piano when he plays. So, you know, you can read all you want into that. It's just weird. But it was kind of fun because at one point one of the women doesn't pedal properly for him, and he gets really angry. So I'm sitting there playing the piano and then start pedaling badly. We don't often imitate exactly what goes on screen, but for some reason, musical instruments, we cannot resist. You know, we're musicians. So when you see someone playing the violin, it's like, well, you've got to make it look like that's plausible for what you're hearing. But we don't try to, you know, accent every footstep or door opening. One of the joys of the silent film era was that the music was very much what you heard. There was not distraction from dialogue. There was not distraction from sound effects. It was basically the music. And so the music really had a chance to blossom. In a lot of ways, it was the golden age of movie music because there wasn't anything else going on.
It had to be part, I mean, not that it isn't part of narrative in films today, in sound films, but it had to be part of the narrative. It had to be interwoven.
Right. Yeah, it had to be there. With modern films, you can have parts that have music and parts that don't. But in a silent film, when the music stops, it's noticeable. And so you only want to use that for effect and where you think it will be powerful. You know, if a character is, you know, dies, sometimes a bit of silence is good. Or if there's a very tense situation, you don't know how it's going to resolve. You can use it as an effect, but it's not your usual way of operating.
For The Vanishing American, 1925 film based on a Zane Grey book, new score.
Yeah, this is a premiere tonight. We have put this together just recently. We had done a series of Native American films on Native American topics for Frank Scheid here at the University of Arkansas. He does this film symposium every year. And so we've done three or four films. And those have, you know, generally been a premiere when we play them here for the first time because Frank is particularly interested in these films. And we're very lucky that two of them we have now had commissioned to record our scores that we prepared for here, and those will be released on Blu-ray in the next year or two. So we're excited about that. The Vanishing American is not one of those. It's going to be released, but there's another score that's going to be on it. So one of the things we did for tonight was I went back through the other scores and said, what were some of the most effective Native American themes? No one's going to remember a year ago what we played. And it's what the orchestras would have done. They would have had their favorite storm music, would probably come up every five or six films, you know, unless they were really bored of it. But you would have a repertoire, and the whole point was you would reuse it. So if you're very, you know, careful and really remember well, you will notice, oh, I see, that was that main theme from The Silent Enemy or something. And I don't think anyone will do that. That's part of the fun. But there's some very nicely written music. There's also some really badly written, at least in the modern taste, especially for Native American things. You've got these things where you've got the tom-toms and me, big engine chief, sort of pentatonic scales. And I've been avoiding those to try to get to some of the more sophisticated music that was written for silent movies. And that's what we'll be playing tonight.
World premiere. The people who are in Giffels tonight will be hearing this for the first time on the planet.
Yeah, this particular score. And a lot of this music, you know, it was heard back in 1928 and 29. There are some of these pieces that maybe haven't been played much, if at all, since then, because the bottom fell out of the market. All of this music, most of it was thrown away. The talkies came in, there was no use for it. Some of it, fortunately, some of these band directors couldn't bear, I think, to give up their collection they'd put so much effort and money and time into, even though there was no use for it, and they just stuffed it in the basement. And that's, and then it shows up, and maybe if it shows up 60 years later, people realize, oh, this could be important. And fortunately, that happened with three or four of these collections that we've been able to get our hands on. And there are other collections around.
It seems as though you have a both improvisational and non-improvisational element to this, because it's improvisational, because, as you said, oh, here's the storm, we can kind of do this thing we visited before. But there is a definite time that you've got to be done with the storm music, because the storm's over.
Right. Oh, yes. Yeah, and that's really what our practice is about, is figuring out how fast do we play these pieces so that when this screen cue happens, we don't have any storms in this tonight's film, but we do quite a number of battles. As a matter of fact, more than are in the original book. I've started reading the original Zane Grey novel, and the first half hour of the movie isn't in the novel. And oddly enough, the first chapter of the book isn't in the movie. You know, it was a very free adaptation of what's going on there. But there's a place where the Navajo come in and they actually attack a cliff house. So we're talking about a clash of early American cultures. And what the filmmakers were doing was setting this up to show the Navajo then being, in a way, attacked by the white people moving in and showing that this is part of something that has been going on for hundreds of years or thousands of years. So when these fights start, we start playing the piece. And we have a certain pattern that we're planning to play, and it's because we've timed it in rehearsal. And sometimes it'll be, you know, this is lasting too long. Let's shorten this repeat by 8 bars, or let's make this cut, or let's add in another repeat so we can make it longer. And the idea is for us to go out with the film, if it's ideal. On a film like this, it's a fairly long film. I also tend to build in what I sometimes call breathing spaces, where the orchestra will stop a piece, and it'll be a little while till the next orchestra cue, and I will improvise on piano, and then it's truly improvisation. I do not know now what I'm going to be playing for those scenes tonight. I know about the mood I'm going to be after. And I also don't know how long it will be, and that's sort of the point, is if we play a piece too slowly, if there's a breathing space where I'm accompanying on piano, I can make it just as long as it needs to be and go out with the blackout, and then we start the next piece. So there are a few more of those tonight than in some of our recordings. In the recordings, that's a little more noticeable, I think, and so we have more time to try to get it exactly right. But to be honest, what we're doing tonight is probably closer to what it was like in 1925 or 6, where these theaters were making a new score every week, and so you had certain little corners that you would cut to make that work efficiently. And part of it was probably not necessarily scoring the entire film, although it's hard to know.
Your eyes are on the screen the entire time?
No, actually, because my neck would get very sore. I'm sitting out to the side. If I'm improvising a score on the piano, which I do as well, then I have to watch the screen the whole time to know what's going on. Here, I am relative, because I scored the film and we've practiced it, once we start a piece, I know that until the last 8 bars, I don't need to worry about the film. It's going at its rate. I'm going at my rate. We get to the last 8 bars. I look up. It's like, are we ahead? Are we behind? Can I even tell? As we get to the end of the piece, I'm thinking, am I going to need to fill a little space here before the next cue, or do we go right into it? And that's, you know, so actually I'm watching it less than you might think.
Finally, you mentioned that you have scores that are on DVDs and Blu-rays, but you also have CDs of your music.
Yes. And the CD, again, a lot of this music has never been recorded. A lot of it has been basically forgotten. And a lot of it's very, very good. And it's written in a late European Romantic style, mostly. You will find there's some, you know, pieces on our CD that are a bit, I wouldn't say totally atonal, but they're very angular. They have strange harmonies, especially some of the ones that are trying to get under your skin a little bit. They were very effective writers, and they studied with the great masters. I mean, you look at the composers and you look at their biographies, and they studied with Dvorak, they studied with Jules Massenet, they studied with Grieg, and then they were looking for the next venue that was producing classical music, and it turned out to be in the movie theaters. And that actually has remained true till today. You know, as things developed from early opera, ballet, and so on, to symphonies. The movies is the first one that's never really gotten the respect that the other ones have. But the movies are really where a lot of important music is happening. It's certainly where a lot of careers in music go, because you can get money for playing for movies where you can't so much unless you're working in an academic environment and working, you know, in certain genres. As a composer, it can be tough. But as you know, movie musicians do pretty well.
I love, you can get the sense of the industrial utilitarian sort of idea behind some of them. Hurry Number 26 is one of
yes.
the titles. So, boy, here, you could call out Hurry Number 26.
Yeah, Hurry Number 26. A lot of them have numbers. And at first I thought, does that mean they had 26 hurries or more? And it turns out that's part of a series, but it helps to specify, because each of the publishing companies would have had hurries. Hurry was an extremely common title. Fast, busy music. You need a lot of that, especially if you're playing a lot of westerns. You know, you got hurries. And some of the hurries are serious and some of them are light. If you're doing a horse race, it's different from if you're doing an Indian charge. So it's, but yeah, it's quite a wide repertoire. And there were literally on the order of 10,000 of these arrangements made. And it's unclear how many were written, because there were so many little publishing companies that went out of business in the Depression. Nobody knows how many pieces they had. And it would be an interesting thing to try to catalog what survives. But I don't know if anyone's trying to do that yet. We're just trying to play them and make them available and let some people know about these composers and how their music was to be used.
People can learn more at your website.
Certainly, yes. So it's we are the Mont Alto Motion Picture Orchestra. The website is Mont Alto with a hyphen, MONT-ALTO.com.
Rodney, thank you so much for your time.
Well, thank you for the interview, and enjoy the show.
Rodney Sauer is a founder of the Mont Alto Motion Picture Orchestra. Last week, the ensemble was on the University of Arkansas campus to perform a new score for the 1925 film The Vanishing American. I spoke with Rodney in the lobby of Carnell Hall on the University of Arkansas campus just a couple of hours before the orchestra accompanied the film in a screening inside Old Main. The latest CD from Mont Alto is titled Love, Betrayal, and Redemption. You can find out more about the CD and learn much more about the orchestra at their website, mont-alto.com. And there was more from our conversation that you can hear right now at OzarksAtLarge.com.